continue to listen for God's word today, this Pentecost Sunday, in John's Gospel. When the Advocate comes, whom I will send to you from the Father, the Spirit of truth, who comes from the Father, he will testify on my behalf. You also are to testify because you have been with me from the beginning. I did not say these things to you from the beginning because I was with you, but now I am going to him who sent me. Yet none of you asked me, where are you going? But because I have said these things to you, sorrow has filled your hearts. Nevertheless, I tell you the truth, Jesus said. It is to your advantage that I go away. For if I do not go away, the Advocate will not come to you. But if I go, I will send the Advocate to you. And when he comes, he will prove the world wrong about sin and righteousness and judgment. About sin, because they do not believe in me. About righteousness, because I am going to the Father and you will see me no longer. And about judgment, because the ruler of this world has been condemned. I still have many things to say to you, but you cannot bear them now. When the Spirit of truth comes, he will guide you into all the truth. For he will not speak on his own, but will speak whatever he hears, and he will declare to you the things that are to come. He will glorify me, because he will take what is mine and declare it to you. All that the Father has is mine. For this reason I said that he will take what is mine and declare it to you. This is the word of the Lord. What do you know about your birth? Do you know the time, the date? Do you know the place? What you don't know is as important as what you do know. It's a common answer in American culture for people to say they don't know their birth story. They never asked for it, or it was never shared. Now, often when we don't know something so foundational to who we are, it's because there's some reason to avoid it. Most often we avoid things that are painful, that are hard for us to make sense of, or that make us feel like something might be wrong with us. So we avoid, we defend, we try to forget, we tell ourselves it's not important to remember. It might not feel like a willful secret that we're keeping, but it is the kind of destructive secrecy that we learn in American culture. We learn to go along without the whole story. We learn to accept dissonance and disequilibrium. We learn to think it's not important to know where we come from. What's most important is where we end up, what we produce, the impact that we make. But secrets can make us sick. It's not that everyone needs to know everything about us, but there are some secrets that do harm. The ones that enable and allow destructive behavior to continue, the kind of secrets that erode trust in our sense of self and the integrity of our relationships with each other. But truth is a pathway to freedom. Our faith tells us that. And truth is how we build trust, and trust is how we build connection with each other. I think you'll agree with me that the world could use more truth. Truth that we can trust. Truth that builds trust. Trust that builds connection. Connections that make us, that make the whole world healthier. What is it about the cultures that have formed us in America that teach us to withhold, to avoid, to keep secrets? What do you know about the birth of this country? Do you know how many Native Americans died when this country was born? We don't generally know that number. It's hard to say how many Native people were living in this country before European contact. Estimates range anywhere from 10 million people to 75 million people. But the percentages of how many were killed stays the same. Around 90% of the population died from European contact, either from violence or disease or forced migration. Secrets can make us sick. The kinds of secrets that allow destructive behavior to continue, the kinds of secrets that make us distrust each other, the kinds of secrets that allow us to keep hurting each other. How vividly can you tell the story of chattel slavery in this country, that uniquely American manifestation of slavery that built this country's economy, the economy that all of us participate in? Again, numbers are hard to come by because of all these generations of secrets. Estimates are that half of the people who were captured for transport even made it to this country alive. If they made it through the forced marches to the slave ships in Africa, if they made it through the weeks at sea in conditions that, frankly, we cannot fathom, then they were here to face the brutality of being enslaved. And estimates are that about 11 million people of African origin died during those years of capture, transport, and enslavement of African people. Just think of all the pain that we've omitted from our story. All the patterns of abuse and violence that we've avoided talking about, the philosophies and practices of conquest that we've whitewashed. And so we repeat these behaviors over and over again as a society. Just in 2015, McGraw-Hill, one of the biggest textbook companies in the country, maybe the biggest, was sued because they took the word slavery out of history books that were going to be used in public schools and replaced it with the word workers. That is happening today. Children in our public schools are using those textbooks. If we don't tell the truth, can we ever be a country of freedom? The purpose we've claimed to be the impulse of our country's birth. Dr. Joy Degree, her goal in telling the full story of this country's history is healing. And she says you can't heal the wound if you don't know the wound. So she has generated some groundbreaking work on what she calls post-traumatic slave syndrome. She explores and describes the contemporary impacts of generations of trauma that began in slavery for communities of color. Now, some of those adaptive and learned behaviors have stuck over generations. And some of them are positive and have helped to cultivate resilience in communities of color. But Dr. Degree points out that others have been negative and created many patterns of suspicion and distorted self-concept and what she calls aversion to anything associated with one's social group. Now, I've had the privilege of meeting Dr. Degree last week at the Lakeshore Equity and Diversity Alliance Summit in Michigan, where we were both speakers. She was the keynote speaker and I was a workshop leader. And she and I got a chance to talk about some of the ways that white dominant communities are always also carriers of generational trauma. The trauma of having secrets, of being perpetrators, of being observers, enablers, witnesses, those who have benefited, those who have not known what to do or been able to speak or known what to say about the violence that shaped our families and our communities. She and I talked about the legacy of white supremacy in this country, When I say white supremacy, I'm not talking about the Ku Klux Klan or hate groups, although those are an extreme expression of white supremacy. I'm talking about a culture that is based on the assumption that white ways are the right ways. And white supremacy has told us a lot of lies about ourselves, about who we are, and who this country is called to be. Did you know that the original Statue of Liberty was holding broken chains in her left hand? But America said, no, we don't want the broken chains to be visible. We don't want the broken chains to be a part of the statue. Now, the sculptor insisted. He was sympathetic with abolitionists, and he thought this was an important part of this country's story. But the country said no. The sculptor insisted on the chains, but instead of the chains being visible in her hand, they are at her feet where no one can see them. There is now, because of Dr. Joy Degree, a picture of those chains at her feet in the Statue of Liberty place where you can learn about the exhibit. America chose not to tell the story, the full story of liberty and freedom and immigration in this country. And so now the Statue of Liberty stands as a symbol of our dissonance, not as a symbol of freedom, like we want her to be. When you don't know your beginnings, if you don't even know what your secrets are, it's hard to get well from the sickness that continues to harm. It's easy to settle into destructive patterns. It's easy to feel disconnected and disoriented and even afraid. White supremacy has marked us all, no matter who you are. It's in the air we breathe. And we're seeing it play out every day in America, in white dominant communities just like ours, with things like moral numbness, discomfort with difficult emotions, discomfort with any emotions. I mean, we're Presbyterian after all. Defensiveness, avoidance of conflict, an assumption that we are entitled to be comfortable, perfectionism, a preference for the kind of power that dominates, paternalism, blindness to racialized disadvantage, denial of racialized disadvantage, normalizing violence, normalizing the silence and incarceration and deportation of the voices of those who are most impacted by injustice and racism and violence. We are all caught up in these patterns. We are captive to the systems and cultures and broken relationships that have formed us. It doesn't make us bad people. It makes us human beings that have been formed in this context. Now, how much do we know about the church's beginnings? Pentecost is about birth. The birth of the church. That first day of Pentecost, that day in Jerusalem, the disciples were doing as Jesus had told them. They were there together, praying on their knees, asking for what they needed. They didn't know what they needed. It was an especially intense time in Jerusalem. It was the Jewish Feast of Weeks that they held 50 days after Passover, and that meant the nations were there in Jerusalem, Jews from far-ranging geography. Now, the ones who loved Jesus knew they needed help. They were grieving, they were confused, they were afraid, and then this violent wind and tongues of fire comes through, and the ones who had been on their knees, confused, asking for what they needed, well, they began to speak in languages they had never known. And those Jesus followers then spilled out into the streets of Jerusalem. And the church was born and learned its purpose. The church's purpose is to meet people where they are, to speak Christ's good news into all different cultures. The church was born to heal broken relationships, not through enforced conformity, not through erasing cultural differences, but to honor them, even to empower them. That is where the church was born, the ultimate picture of cultural competency. The music of the church's birth was this glorious cacophony of language and strangers coming together to share the good news of how the truth can set us free. It's hard to imagine the power of that moment. Now, Scripture tells us that this powerful moment was met with denial. While all were astonished and many were transformed, others sneered. They must be drunk. They must be crazy. The Spirit's movement can be threatening. We know that. We know that feeling of feeling threatened. This is not a delightful breeze that blows through. It is a powerful wind, a violent wind that changes things. And whenever that kind of wind blows through, there will always be people who try to fight it. While denial and hostility were in the room when the church was born, the Spirit birthed freedom that day. Freedom from the things that those grieving ones, those confused ones, those disparate ones, freedom from the things that had them in chains. The church was born from together in one place, from understanding, from trust, from connection. The church's purpose has always been to bring disparate and divided worlds together with love, with a powerful love. The church is supposed to be about love, the kind of love that speaks truth, the kind of love that sets us free. Now, the gospel writer of John tells us our purpose, church. Loud and clear, our purpose is to prove the world wrong. But somehow, Christians of many stripes, including ours, forgot our beginnings. Because from where I sit, I can find a lot of examples of the church proving the world right, rather than proving the world wrong. If the church was out proving the world wrong, then there would not have been a church standing at the center of the Ghana slave castle during the slave trade, where soldiers worshiped as human beings were piled on top of each other, underneath them being tortured and prepared for shipment to this country. If the church were about proving the world wrong, the Presbyterian Church would not have had boarding schools in New Mexico that took Pueblo children away from their families and forced them to cut their hair and stop speaking their language. If the church were about proving the world wrong, it would not have been one of the most effective instruments of judgment and shame Western culture has ever seen when it comes to sexuality and gender. If the church were about proving the world wrong, it would not have been full of ministers and theologians, even the beloved Reinhold Niebuhr during the civil rights movement, who told people of color to slow down and be patient. Who, as James Cone describes in his book, The Cross and the Lynching Tree, failed to connect the cross of Jesus' crucifixion and the lynching tree that terrorized black and brown people in this country for generations. Learning the story of the church's beginnings is some of the most important work we can do together, Grace Covenant. Our beginnings help us know who we are called to be in these confusing, bewildering times and what healing could look like for us. The Spirit was there when the church was born, in tongues of fire, in wounded human beings finding courage to try a new way of being together, a new way where they felt incompetent, ill-equipped. Not sure how it happened, not sure where they were going, but the Spirit provided them with exactly what they needed. The church was born of the courage to prove the world wrong about the things that seek to divide us. The church was born when the truth spilled out into the streets, and people that hadn't previously been able to hear each other and see each other, those people who had been taught to fear each other and to be suspicious of each other, those disparate and weary and wary people, those people became a family of faith that day. That is who was there when we were born. That unlikely gathering of people ready to build something new together. And that story of our birth is calling us back to the Spirit, that same Spirit that was there that day, Grace Covenant, to reclaim our God-given, Christ-driven purpose to prove the world wrong and to believe and to share the good news that the truth will set us free. Happy Pentecost. Thanks be to God. Yeah.